It's Wednesday, January 18th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, it's my birthday, and we talk about Wings of Reen, and we have some final thoughts on Big O 2.
Let's do this!
So, it's my birthday, even though I completely forgot, and the only reason I realized it was my birthday is because people kept telling me all day.
I also completely forgot, and we just seem to not care about birthdays anymore.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know when your birthday is. I only know it's a few months after mine.
It's April 30th, I think.
Whenever I forget how old I am, I just ask you, and then I know that I'm at most a year older.
Yeah. It's kind of weird when you're a little kid, you're going to get a bunch of presents, and you don't have money, so you don't usually get stuff so often. So you're like, oh my god, my birthday's in like 10 days. Oh my god, it's in 9 days, you know? But once you're at this age, you're just like, oh, birthday, right.
Well, I also realized,
need anything.
Because a bunch of people asked me, so, Rim, what do you want for your birthday? And I couldn't honestly think of anything.
Yeah, buy me a computer. How about a car? I could use those things.
I mean, I really want for nothing. The only kinds of things I want are things that I wouldn't expect someone to just buy me. So I guess the only gifts I like are just, like, creative or nice gifts or things I wouldn't think of getting that aren't particularly useful, that are just cool.
Yeah, seriously, if you're going to give me a present, it's like, it's got to be, nowadays, it's got to be something I can't buy. Because if I can buy it, what do I need you to buy it for me?
For me, I just have a big, I have a very difficult time buying gifts for other people when I, like, if I feel obligated to. Like, I'll see a thing, I'll give people gifts just randomly when I decide that it's a good gift-giving time. But I almost never give gifts around Christmas or any other holiday.
I just tend not to give things because I don't expect things. But if I have a reason to give someone something, it's either something, like, generic, like, flowers, they're nice, you know, they'll go away and that'll be that, or you know, you make something for someone. Like, that's what you can do that's awesome, is you can always make something for someone, especially if you have art and or craft skills, because that's not something that anyone can just buy in the store. So it's like, oh, if someone goes and buys something for me, it's like, oh great. If someone makes something, it's like, oh, especially if it's an awesome thing. If you make a crap thing, I guess, you know, whatever. I'll just feel bad.
So, in the news today, PC game sales, I remember way back we had a discussion about whether or not PC gaming was dead, $10 million less worth of PC games were sold this year as opposed to last year.
Were $10 million more Xbox games sold?
I don't know, but I have the list here on GameSutra of what the top 10 games in 2005 were. And
PC games, right?
Yeah, PC games only.
All right.
And the one interesting thing is that basically 1, 2, 3, 4 of the top 10 are The Sims 2 or Sims 2 related items.
Really?
Yeah, if you add up all the Sims 2 that is on this list, The Sims 2 is far and away the number one PC game in the world for another year.
Now, please repeat to me the minimum system requirements. In fact, repeat to me the recommended system requirements for playing The Sims 2.
You know what? I think it's suffice to say that The Sims 2 runs on a computer that's slower than mine.
And you know what? That makes it pretty much dumb to have a more powerful computer.
Now, the list, number one, if you break them up, I'll just read the list. Number one is World of Warcraft. Duh. Number two is The Sims 2, some expansion. The number three game is Sims 2, which I think came out in 2004, didn't it?
I don't know when it came out, but definitely not recently.
Guild Wars is number four.
Oh, really? I thought the game had, like, that was the one with no monthly fee, right?
I think so. There are a few real games on the list in addition to these fluff games.
Yeah, that was the MMO that was supposed to have no monthly fee because you would pay $50 and get it in the store and that would be that. And it was supposed to be different, like no evil grinding and whatever, but it turned out to just be crap like every other MMO.
Yep. Number five is Roller Coaster Tycoon 3.
You know, you look at those games and you say, oh, that's just another one of those generic tycoon games.
It's probably the most evolved form of that type of game right now.
Yeah, I actually played the original Roller Coaster Tycoon before any of the other tycoons existed. And it was actually kind of fun for a while. It's like, it's just like SimCity 2000, only with a different theme on it.
Yeah.
And you get to design little roller coasters, which can be fun.
Number six was Battlefield 2, which I hear is actually a pretty good game.
Yeah, I heard it was all right.
Number seven, The Sims 2, another expansion. Mm-hmm. Number eight, Age of Empires 3.
All right. I never actually played those.
I've heard that they're kind of a lot of people try to compare them to Civilization games, and they're just a completely different kind of game, really.
Hmm.
I've never known anyone who actually liked them. Or at least if they have, they never said anything.
Yeah, I never actually played one, so I can't say.
Number 9 is another Sims thing. Yeah. And number 10 is Call of Duty 2.
Oh, one of those generic World War games.
Yeah.
So, what it all comes down to is that, as I said, and people may or may not have believed me, PC gaming, in terms of gamers gaming on PCs with FPSs and
RTSs. I mean, it's not dead. RTSs. I mean, there are people who play PC games, and PC games are a big business still, but there's no market for PC games that require fast computers.
Mm-hmm.
That's I hate to say it, but notice how Half-Life 2 and its derivatives aren't even on that list.
Yeah. And well, Half-Life 2 came out last year, but The Sims came out 2 years, right? So, come on.
Yeah.
Doom 3 doesn't appear. Quake 4 doesn't appear.
Well, I can see why Doom 3 doesn't appear. That game was pretty piss poor.
Well, Quake 4 was also sort of generic, but those other games that people were hyping up, the Fear game didn't appear. That even that one, what was it called? The Indigo Prophecy, that didn't appear.
Oh, yeah.
People talked that one up big time. Where is it? No one bought it.
Yeah, I mean, part of it's that, I mean, because I saw another report, we won't get into the news on this, but PC sales are down significantly, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, honestly, other than hardcore gamers and people like us, very few people need new computers anymore, and they've realized this, and they stopped buying them.
It's starting to get to the point where the only people buying new computers are dumb people who have it spyware up and they don't know better.
Yep.
And people who are so poor that they couldn't afford one before, and now they're getting so cheap they can finally get one.
Or gamers who know what they need and get it.
Yep, but that's not too much, because there aren't PC games coming out and selling big that they need to upgrade for.
Yeah, so which is also bringing hardware costs down to where fast PCs are getting cheaper daily. I mean, I'm going to build a new PC probably this weekend, partly because I was looking around online, and I was just thinking, all right, I want to build a $300 or $400 computer, because that's all I need. I don't play the new games so much, and that'll play those new games just fine anyway. And I wanted a little micro ATX motherboard, but I saw that they all kind of suck compared to large, full-size motherboards. And then I stumbled upon a motherboard that looked awesome. It was perfect in every way, and it was really cheap. And I thought it was a normal motherboard, ATX. And I'm deciding, all right, I'm going to buy this motherboard, because it does everything I need. Then I look, and I find out that not only is it micro ATX, which I didn't notice, yet it still has 4 DIMMs and 2 SATAs and 2 IDEs.
4 SATAs.
4 SATAs.
Yep.
It has everything. It has everything I would possibly need. It's micro ATX. It has RAID 5 built into it.
On the SATA, there's a RAID 5, and the Northbridge has a GeForce 6100 built into it with a DVI and a VGA connector on the motherboard.
And you can use them both simultaneously. It's dual head.
Yeah.
And so, not only that, that video card supports DirectX 9. It's basically a top-of-the-line video card.
So the only thing really wrong with this motherboard is that you need extra RAM because the video card doesn't have its own RAM, so you need to give it normal RAM.
However, it takes standard DDR, and DDR is cheap. Yep. DDR PC 3200.
Yep, that's what I have in my computer.
And that RAM is fairly dirt cheap. I'm probably going to get a couple gigs of RAM at least.
Yeah, I would recommend 2 gigs because the video card doesn't have any.
Yeah, well, also because I do, you know, the podcast, and RAM directly translates to the podcast sounding better because I can do more to it.
Yep. And you just throw a nice, powerful 64-bit AMD processor in there, and you're good to go. The sound card that's on the motherboard is a little crappy, but that can be replaced.
It's socket, 939? So it takes the Athlon FX 64, the Athlon 64.
You can't afford the FX.
No. And it also takes the Sempron. So I could put a Sempron in there now, and then a year from now, when an FX is cheap, just buy the top, the fastest FX there is and stick it in.
I would just get a normal AMD 64, actually.
I'm probably going to go with 64 since I'm going to do Linux, and if I install Windows on it, I'll get that 64-bit version of Windows.
Yeah. That's the sure bet to make sure everything's all good.
Yeah, though if I'm cheap, I could just throw the top-of-the-line Sempron in there.
The thing is, I've heard the Semprons, there's some weird things where some of them are some way and some of them are another way, and it gets weird. So you have to be real careful buying those.
Yeah, actually, so because there's different...
Well, like, the Sempron 64s, the normal Semprons are something else, but you can't put that in there.
Well, you know what? I'll probably, over the next couple of weeks, be building my computer, so I'll have regular updates to all of you who may also be in the market for computers as to exactly what I'm getting and why.
Mm-hmm. The one thing, though, is right now you have a full tower case. You're going to be switching to one of those little tiny cases like the one that my parents have.
Oh, it's going to be so fantastic.
It's going to be so tiny and you're not going to be able to put a bunch of stuff in there. It only has room for one hard drive and one...
Well, it depends on what kind of case I get.
Yeah, but, you know, other cases can hold micro ATX boards. But really, you can get a normal ATX board that probably is the same exact thing with a good, better sound card in it.
Well, actually, I was looking, and I saw two micro ATX cases that they both have space for four hard drives within them.
Really?
And they have... I'll dig up the link another time, but I saw it at work.
Okay, because and usually I figure the
point... They're a little bigger than the ones we typically see, but they're still micro ATX, and they're still tiny. And they have the USB and the FireWire and the fronts, and then it has one external 5 1/4 bay, which is all I need because a DVD burner is going to go there.
Yeah, that's it.
And it looks perfect. It's a kind of expensive, but it's got the mad quiet cooling, which is what I want more than anything.
Yeah, the big giant fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, micro ATX is a lot easier to cool and clean just because it's really little and the airflow is usually really simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just that all the micro ATX cases I've seen that look really nice are usually really small and cramped and don't have a lot of room to put drives. But
yeah,
that's kind of the point, is that you're only getting a small motherboard because you want this small, tiny, cute case. And you know that you're not going to put a lot of stuff in it because you want a tiny, cute case. But if you found one that fits, that's pretty cool.
Yep. Of course, I'm still doing my research because the last time I bought a computer, I did 3 months of research before I finally bought one.
Hmm.
But, of course, now I know a lot more about computers because the last time I did this was in the year 2000. And I don't think it'll take me 3 months this time.
I don't think so either.
But it's going to be a big weekend if I get a computer and Scott gets a car.
Yeah, maybe I will get the car this weekend or next week. Who knows? I'll have to call those people.
Yeah, because I was at work, and there's a race car guy at my office. He races cars. He knows a lot about cars. And I mentioned, hey, the Mazda 3 is really the only good car in that class. And he said, yeah, the Mazda 3 is by far the best car in that price range you can ever buy.
Great. I just need more reasons to go and get this thing.
I know. He said, and then he said, like, the 6 is just as good if you want a sedan.
Yeah, I drove the 6. It was a... drove like my dad's car, so I don't want it.
Yeah, it was very sedan-y.
Mm-hmm. Sedan-y.
So we got some more news, right?
Oh, right. So everyone might have noticed today there's a big hubbub about this Firefox pinging privacy, you know, hole in the new version or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't read much about it because I saw the alarmism and I decided I was just going to wait for someone who knows better to just tell me about it.
Well, here's exactly what's going on here. There are people who have websites, and they want to track when people click on links. So what they do right now is I would put a link on my website, and I would set that link up in such a way with JavaScript or with a redirect or both so that when you click on it, it actually takes you to a page besides the one that it links to. So let's say I had a website, and I had a link on my website that said... old archives, and I wanted to know how many people were clicking on the archives, right? I would set it up so that when you clicked on archives, it took you somewhere else and then to the archives, or loaded another page and then loaded the archives. And that other page does a whole bunch of stuff so I know who you are and I can see, oh, look how many people visited this page. People who visited, I can see, aha. So I know that everyone who visited that page clicked on a link on my site that goes to the archives.
Now, that might sound kind of hackish to you, and it is kind of hackish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's prone to problems. It can slow your server down, the redirects might not work, people disable things like JavaScript.
Yeah, so that's not really the best thing, especially because it slows down page loading times. Because now you have to load this other page, and then load the page you actually want to go to. So, they've added in Firefox... to a link, you can put a ping. What this does is whenever anyone clicks on that link, Firefox will send a ping to the URL in the ping attribute. So it takes this whole entire page out of the critical path. So you don't actually have to load another page. You just go where you're going like nothing happened. And then this ping takes place with XMLRPC or something that you don't even know or care about so that people running websites... can still track people, clicking on links without, making web browsing a shittier experience.
Now, a lot of people are saying that this might be a privacy violation or it's just another way to track people, and it's really not that big a deal.
I mean, people can do this already, so you're not really, you're making it a little bit easier for them to do it, Because now they don't have to hack together something with, you know, redirect or whatever. But there's a hole in IE that can't be closed that lets people do this. You know, it just works, and people do it all the time, and there's not much you can do about people tracking you, visiting, you know. If you access someone's web server, they're going to log it, and they can get information out of you that is sent to them by your browser.
Well, I mean,
the browser
isn't
sending any more information now than it's sending already.
We know a lot about the people looking at Geek Nights. We can see a lot of times what kind of web browsers people are using. I can look at the feed and see exactly what RSS readers you're using out there.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted, I could track you down specifically.
Yeah. The thing is you can feel free to disable all those things, and there's actually ways to do that. You can disable referrals, and you can disable your user agent strings, and you can change all these things so that people can't track you when you visit websites. You can go through proxies and hide your IP address. You can hide everything if you go through the effort. But there's a point at which disabling things makes the web a shittier experience for you. So, and actually giving away that information doesn't really harm you. I mean, someone detecting that you're using Firefox isn't really an invasion of privacy.
In fact, it might be, you could consider it a good thing, because then they might be more inclined to care if Firefox works on their site properly.
Yeah, so this is just one, it's just a way to make something easier that is currently kind of making the web shittier.
Now, of course, I mean, this is new, and obviously we're going to see how people use and abuse it in the coming months.
Mm-hmm.
So just stay tuned, and I don't think anything big is going to come of it.
The one thing I think is that actually it won't solve the problem it's trying to solve, because people will use it in places instead of their redirects and things, but only people with Firefox are currently supporting this change. So they're still going to use the shitty redirects to track the IE people and others. So until IE7 comes out or whatever, this isn't going to solve the problem they're trying to solve.
But at the same time, webmasters who are savvy, this will make it a lot easier for them to notice how many Firefox users they actually have. Because it's possible that there are a lot more Firefox users out there than the statistics say.
I also see people making cool things happen by using the pinging feature, somehow incorporating web services and links and things. So that could be a bonus. Someone will do something with that. I'm not the biggest toy freak. You know, there are those people who will buy every single toy, and they'll go to Toys R Us to get Toys R Us exclusive toys, and Walmart to get Walmart exclusive toys and whatnot. And they won't open the packages. They'll just like hang them on their wall, and they'll organize like their entire rooms with toys along the walls and poses, and organized by what series they're from and what, you know, universe they're from and whatnot.
See, to me, those people have issues.
Yeah, they're just crazy collectors. But I do like the occasional toy, especially when it's extra cool or has some special meaning or something, especially if it's fun to play with. If it's fun to play with, that's like the hugest bonus a toy can have. So today I saw a toy series that combines two really awesome things: Star Wars and Transformers.
Yeah.
So they've got the first toy. There are four toys. I've only seen three of them. The first one is, you know those little Jedi fighters from episodes 1, 2, 3? They're kind of pointy. They look like little tiny Millennium Falcons. There's one of those that transforms into Obi-Wan.
This one's kind of stupid. It doesn't transform into Obi-Wan. It transforms into some fat Jedi guy with a lightsaber.
That's pretty much, yeah, that's right. There's one that is General Grievous, which is a really good toy to begin with. And then it transforms into that big circle thing. Remember in episode 2 when Grievous was in that circle thing and he rolled around a bit? So that's an okay toy. It's actually supposedly the highest quality toy in the series. The third toy, which I saw, is the one which said, okay, I have to buy this, even though it looks like a piece of crap, but I don't care. It's a TIE Fighter Advanced that transforms into Darth Vader.
Wow.
The lightsaber becomes little red lasers that the TIE Fighter shoots.
It's pretty badass looking. I'm kind of impressed with this toy.
No, it looks like a piece of shit as far as toys go, but
not when it's in the TIE Advanced state, it looks really cool.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, in terms of like the quality of the toy, it's just some crap toy. But it's so cool in what it is, that it's a TIE Fighter that turns into Darth Vader.
Now, they don't say what the fourth toy is, though.
That's because they didn't. The people who reported this went to Target and just saw the toys, and they didn't see a fourth toy. There was one.
I'll bet it's a Yoda that turns into a yo-yo.
That would be cool.
Or a Super Ball.
Or a Luke that turns into an X-Wing or something.
A Luke that turns into his father.
It'd be nice if it was like an Emperor. An Emperor that turned into like an electricity. I don't know what.
Yeah.
I can't think of it what it could be, but...
Just make him turn into a freaking Death Star.
Dude, that's pretty good. I'll go for that.
So, I have the 1990 Nintendo World catalog. And we remembered, when looking at this, that back in the 90s, Nintendo released more merchandise in this country than you would ever believe.
Want it.
This catalog shows entire rooms furnished in nothing but Nintendo brand merchandise. We're talking Nintendo, like, bean bags, Nintendo bed sheets, Nintendo husbands. Things you sit on, not husbands.
Nintendo furniture.
Nintendo clothing. Nintendo clothing that if you wore today, you'd be the coolest kid ever.
Of course, no one still has this clothing.
I might have some of it. I mean, I remember I had, because two of the things were these knit hats. And I remember having a Legend of Zelda and a Mario knit hat.
The closest I ever got to owning any of this stuff, other than, of course, the games and such, was a Nintendo Mario alarm clock. You know, the old style with a little hammer that banged back and forth between two bells.
I had a Care Bears alarm clock that was just like that.
My mom ordered it from the JCPenney catalog. We went to the JCPenney desk to pick it up, and it was broken. So she gave it back. And then we got another one from the same place. It was also broken. So I never got that clock, and I got a normal clock instead.
So, it's actually scary how many things in that catalog I remember owning.
It's scary that in the catalog I want almost everything that's in there, and they no longer sell it. There is so little Nintendo merchandise, official merchandise, available in this country today compared to there was before and compared to Japan today. In Japan, you can get all this stuff and more, but you can't get, you know, anything in this country. You can get like a few t-shirts, a few pins, and that's about it.
Kind of sad.
You can't get Mario shoes anymore. Can't get Mario hats so easily anymore.
Yep.
Kinda.
Mario racing suits. Mario footies.
Yeah. I don't know. A Nintendo brand TV stand. Beat that.
So anyway, today is Anime Day. And we've got some final thoughts on Big O 2 since we've seen it all. But first, we watched episode 1 of Wings of Reen, and we got some things to say about it.
Well, we didn't know anything about the show, and we started watching it, other than the name.
Now, it starts out really cool. It shows, like, Japan, modern Japan, normal, mundane Japan, and there are all these kids. And it looks like they're engaged in some sort of, like, governmental military coup against the American, not occupiers, but the American Defense Forces in Japan. It looks like it's going to be some sort of political, cool thing.
It seems like they want to, have a real Japanese military, and, like, they don't want to be drafted. I couldn't even tell, but they were rebelling, and they were cool kids.
And seriously rebelling. Like, they got a hold of an RPG and actually fired it at some U.S. troops that were chasing them.
Yeah, they were driving this Humvee around, and they shot the rocket.
Now, while all this is going on, there's one moment where, like, a little, feather appears and goes whoosh on the screen. And it went by in a second, and up until this point, there had been no magic in the show, and the feather disappeared right away, and we weren't sure what it was. Not a few minutes later, giant, giant magical battleships fly up from under the ocean, and they're from a mystical land far away, and then there's a girl who has wings that come out of her feet, and the show gets fucked up.
And then it's really, really hard to understand what's going on. Like, for a while, I thought that there was like one battleship, and I thought it was just coming to fight the Earth, or it would just got lost or something. But I finally realized that there were actually two sets of battleships that appeared, and they were fighting each other. And the fact that it took me so long to realize that it wasn't...
They introduce a million characters right away, and you have no idea who they are or what they're doing or what's going on.
Yeah,
and
you don't even know their names, and they don't develop them or tell you anything about them. You just see characters doing stuff, and you see the same characters over and over again doing stuff, but you don't know about them or why they're doing anything. And
now, to its credit,
just action.
The main character gets on one of these battleships. I think he's the main character, almost right away by accident. And the first thing he does is find someone and ask them what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. And he's very like, what the hell? What is this? What's going on? But everyone ignores him. for several minutes, we thought that, in fact, they couldn't see him and that this was some sort of plot device. But no, they were just ignoring him, and then they talked to him later, and they still don't explain anything.
That's terrific.
Like, I don't know if the show's going to go anywhere, but it introduced a season's worth of plot in one episode, as far as I can tell.
As far as I can tell, there was no plot, and it was just a bunch of action scenes involving some battleships that appear from under the ocean, combined with U.S. military equipment of modern times, and then that was it.
Like, they keep introducing things, like the battleships are here, and they start to fight, but then there's these, like, dragon golem things on them, and then they have these special engines that do something weird, and it's just getting more and more out of control, and then there's a big explosion, and, like, a nuke, and an engine falls out, and it's crazy, and then a spoiler for the next 5 seconds. And then at the end of the show, like, there's a big explosion, and everyone's dying, and then the main character is like, ah... And then it was like he says, like, it's all a dream, and then the episode ends.
Yeah.
We don't know if it was actually a dream or what.
The thing was, is I just realized now, I went to the Anime News Network Encyclopedia and looked it up. This is actually a spinoff from Aura Battler Dunbine, which is an anime I'd heard of, but never actually have seen.
It doesn't sound that good.
I don't know, but the point is that... You remember in the show they were talking about, like, Aura engines or something like that?
Yeah.
So I think that it actually is a spinoff of some kind.
Great.
I don't know if you have to read the manga to understand this or watch Aura
Battle
Dunbine.
You have to do something. This show makes no sense on its own whatsoever.
Yeah, so maybe if you watch enough episodes, you know what's going on, but I'm pretty sure you have to, like, read either manga or watch some other anime to understand what the hell this is.
So, moving on to better anime that we've actually seen all of, Big O 2, which we've talked about twice before, we're done with it, we've seen the end, and there's actually a lot there. This show went in directions I didn't expect at all.
Well, I expected the direction it went.
Oh yeah, but I didn't expect the magnitude of the direction it went in.
I don't know, it seemed about right to me.
I mean, I guess the warning I have for anyone who's thinking about watching the show is that it literally, and I know, I mean literally in a literal sense, pulls an Evangelion.
Oh yes, very much so. The ending is has many, many parallels with the ending of the Evangelion TV show.
As in, there's action going on, and then the show kind of pans back and does the same thing of, hey, I use big robots to trick you into watching my show. Now here's the moral.
Yep.
And then fade out the end.
See, now the thing is that I had seen this show maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I probably would have had a much better opinion of it. It's just that I've seen so many shows that, like, they put the moral as the ending instead of after the ending, you know, and they just all of a sudden turn into this huge, like, blatantly in-your-face, metaphorical type of thing that it doesn't, you know, do it for me as much as it used to. Especially when it's pretty much like I've seen it all. So if you do the same thing again, it doesn't work
well
for me.
Well, at least the thing is, the moral is pretty much present in every single episode of Big O 2.
That is true.
It just plays out over and over and over again. So if you watch the first 6 or 7 episodes and you can't figure out where the show's going, you might want to brush up on your plot predicting skills.
Yeah, and if you can't figure it out even after the first season of Big O, which I guess I can somewhat understand, if you don't know what's going to happen after, like, the first 2 episodes of Big O 2, or just the first 1 episode of Big O 2, you know everything, you know, that's, it just, you know everything then.
Because basically every episode of Big O 2 it plays out in a different way. It's always the same moral, but it plays out sometimes in a funny way, sometimes in a serious way, sometimes in a weird way, sometimes in a super metaphorical way. But every episode has the same kind of thread of who am I, why do I exist, metaphysical, extant kind of philosophy, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually really, really am satisfied with how the show ended, as opposed to Big O 1, which I would have killed people if they hadn't continued it.
I just view the whole thing as one show called Big O.
Yeah.
But there's a separation where the second half starts like it, kind of like how I view it up, where this is the first half, and then, you know, there's the Jupiter Jazz, whatever. And there's the second half.
Yep.
Only the thing is, Cowboy Bebop, a lot of the episodes had nothing to do with the overall plot, but in Big O, all of them did. But I'm talking about the same kind of separation that Cowboy Bebop had in the two halves, is that what Big O has.
Yep. Now, if you saw Big O 1 and you weren't impressed, and you're just not even considering Big O 2, I highly recommend just watch the first DVD of Big O 2, in the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first episode of Big O 2, which we've mentioned a couple times before, is really, really well done and interesting.
Yeah, I think there's one problem with Big O is that it sort of misrepresents itself. In that a lot of people will watch like the first one and be like, oh, this is just Batman. You know, or
because it kind of is the first one.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is just Steam Detectives clone with Batman, and it sort of is, but that's really just the setting and the, you know, the style and the items used in terms of like the plot and the characters and what happens. It's totally not any of those things.
I mean, the first 13 episodes are kind of just flim, and there's not really that much to them, except if you watch Big O 2 and then you think back to Big O 1. One, there's a lot more meaning there and you see a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you pull the whole anime logic thing because Utena had the same deal. In Utena, which for any of you who haven't seen it, weird things happen, like weird anime things. Like there's a magic arena where people fight duels and this castle in the sky like falls down on someone but they don't get killed. And most people watch the show and instead of thinking, that was fucked up, why did that happen? What the hell? They think, oh, that's just the way this anime is. I'm not going to worry about it. What? And then at the end of Utena, they explain, oh, there was a reason. Why didn't I wonder why there was a freaking floating castle in the sky? There's actually a perfectly rational explanation for it.
It's one of those things where they make you suspend disbelief by putting the show on as a fantasy or a sci-fi. But in reality, you shouldn't have suspended disbelief, you know, because it was actually real or
yep.
something.
I mean, the Big O is a very unrealistic robot. It's big and it punches things in ways that you really can't do. Mm. So think about that. How could that actually be? Because it is in the show. It happens. And they explain it very directly in a very heavily handed way.
Yeah, there are a lot of things in the show actually that go completely you know, it's weird because they'll always look for a rational explanation for things. And they'll always talk about things in a strange way. And you just, you know, you think, what the hell are they talking about? You know, what are the rules of the universe this show is in when the whole time the show is in the same rules as our universe? They're just making you suspend disbelief, you know, and tricking you into doing it when you shouldn't.
Yep, Big O 1 does it really well. But notice even in Big O 1, I mean, half the time there's robots fighting and a quarter of the time there's funny stuff. But a lot of the whole first season and much of the second season is just Roger talking to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people just kind of gloss over what he's saying because it's just, you know, typical meta-philosophy, blah, 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 oh. But if you really listen to the words he's saying, that's what the whole show's about. And there's actually a lot there. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go off on one of my philosophical things because I got a lot out of Big O, too. And I guess a spoiler warning, I'm going to do my best not to ruin the show, but if you really are worried about Big O 2 being ruined for you, you could probably stop listening at this point, because we're not doing any meta bits after we talk about Big O 2. But basically, consider the premise of Big O 2. The premise is that, and Big O, 40 years ago, everyone lost their memories, and no one knows what happened in the world before that time. There's no clue. Yet, everyone just got on along with their lives and lived, and played whatever roles they decided to play in the new world. And the people who lived the best were the ones who didn't worry about what happened before or what came before because there was really no way to know. Now, that seems kind of weird, you know, you don't know what happened 40 years ago, and it's a very direct problem to these people, and some people can't handle it. But look at our world, the real world, the world we're in right now, Meat Space. We have the same issue, except it's much further into our history. We don't know the history of humanity. We have a lot of theories, but we really don't know what civilizations were and what happened to them and where people came from and what they did and why we're here now. And but a lot of people don't think about it because it's so long ago that the only people who worry about it are philosophers, because most people, they just think back and they don't really consider the fact that we have no clue where we came from.
Well, historians think about it, too.
Yeah.
And they thought they actually figured out a lot, but not
enough. Yes. But, like, we know, like, I'm not saying, oh, magic, creation, whatever, any of that BS, but definitely there are civilizations that we know almost nothing about other than that they may have existed, like the Mycenae civilization.
Cyclopeans.
Yes.
Whee!
But Big O did, and I really like this, is they took that idea that we don't know where we came from, and they made it a present issue. Instead of the point before which we don't know anything is millions and millions of years ago, that point is within the lifespan of people who are alive in this world. And it forces, the whole show is just showing characters dealing with the fact that they can never know where they came from. And as Roger concludes, realizing that it doesn't matter because you can choose to be whoever you are or whatever you are. And the world around you is the world around you, and you can take it as you will.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I got out of it. And I really like that because it's an idea I actually hadn't considered before until I saw Big O.
Yeah, I probably would have gotten more out of it. It's just that I've been turned off by seeing the same. It's something, you know, it's like seen it before. If it wasn't something I'd seen before.
Yep.
Not specifically Big O, but, you know, the same kind of thing. You know, it would have been like, ooh, they did something really cool there. But see, I've seen the same kind of thing like 20 times.
See, I've seen similar things in that they have this kind of philosophical agenda and they use a robot to show it to you, or it's a very, you know, intellectual show like this. But I've never seen a show that addressed the specific philosophical idea that Big O addressed before.
Alright, I guess that's
just
true.
Just the idea of take the fact that we don't know where we came from and make it urgent, make it recent, make it something that you can't just ignore.
Yeah.
And then take characters and see how they react to it.
I guess I'm not really, you know, it doesn't really matter which specific idea. It could have been any philosophical idea. I'm just generally turned off by, you know, philosophical ideas.
I definitely see where you're coming from. And if Big O hadn't been the specific idea that it was, if it had been the same idea Ava had, or the same idea Escaflowne had, or if it had been any sort of rehash of an idea that's just been in anime over and over, I probably would have hated Big O too. It's just that it happened to be about an issue that I hadn't really considered philosophically before that really made me like the show.
Mm.
Now, if you were mad about the original ending to Evangelion, don't watch Big O 2. You're going to hate the end. It's the same thing, except no one's going to make a movie to explain what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show you what happens physically, because it doesn't matter. Just like the end of Eva, the robots fighting didn't matter. All that mattered is what went on in Shinji's head.
Yeah, see, I used to be, like, all into this stuff. Like, I'd watch Eva, and I'd be like, oh, it was the best thing ever. Or, like, Akira, where, you know, you don't really know what happens at the end. It's just kind of, you know, this vague metaphorical thing. And I'd be like, oh, I get it, or I don't get it. And I would always be like, ooh, it was awesome anyway. Or, you know, something like that. And it would be the greatest thing in the world. And shows that were just kind of, like, you know, normal, where you see what physically happens, and that's that, were kind of like, oh, these aren't as smart as these other shows. They don't do anything for me. But now, it's like I must have seen 100 shows just like this, where instead of having an ending and then a moral, or an ending with a moral, they have a moral in place of an ending. You know, like, they make the ending all, ooh, for fun, you know? And if you go and look at the IMDb top movies list, I don't know if it's still number one, but for the longest freaking time, number one was The Godfather. And I would be like, all right, that was a really good movie, but why is it, you know, number one? And why is it still there at number one? It doesn't really, you know, is it really that much better than every other movie? And then I started that thing, I don't know, I've never finished it, I should go back to it, where I was watching every single movie in the top 250 of IMDb. And I saw a lot of freaking movies that were either, like, way out there and artsy, and some that were just way normal. And I realized the reason The Godfather is number one is because it's both at the same time. It's not all, you can watch it and it would just be a perfectly normal, see everything that happens, you know, mundane, unmeaningful plot movie. But at the exact same time, it's the most meaningful movie with all kinds of symbolism and things all over the place. But it doesn't make one instead of the other. The end of The Godfather, it doesn't just turn into like metaphorical stuff. You still see what's happening. You look at it and it's, at the end, he's in the church, you know, saying, I do, you know, get rid of the devil. I won't do bad things, whatever they do in church. I don't remember exactly what he said. And they keep going back and forth between him and the church, you know, for that, and the hitman that he told to kill people killing people. And it's an action scene, but at the same time, it's as metaphorical and meaningful as you can get.
Yep. And as opposed to, say, Evangelion, where the original ending was literally they don't show you anything that happens, and it's just Shinji in his head contemplating the meaning of existence.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, if you still haven't seen enough crazy metaphorical endings to, you know, turn you off to that sort of thing, then you'll probably still like Big O 2.
Yeah, now see, I can I never tire of a show that does that, because that's all I'm there for, at least for shows like this. The only thing that tires me, really, as opposed to you, are shows that try to do this, but either do it about a philosophical philosophical construct that's boring, useless, or already done to death, or a show that just does it poorly.
Doing anything poorly, whether it's, you know, metaphorical or not, is just poor to begin with.
I mean, I guess Big O 2, to me, did this really well. And you don't realize what it's doing right away, but I was extremely pleased with the ending, and I'm extremely pleased with the ideas I've been churning about since I saw it.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I did like the show a whole lot, and it did do what it did a lot better than other people have done, you know, similar
things.
Yeah,
I see where you're coming from. It's just a lot of shows do this, and
but it's like, I've seen this 100 times, you know. Okay, you taught me something new. I learned a new philosophy. Woo, you know. Well, it's not like you enlighten me to some great amazingness.
Well, see, this comes down to the argument Scott and I always have, because I'm very philosophical and he's very pragmatic. And whenever we argue, we always tend to go in the exact opposite directions, to the point that we're 100% diametrically opposed on every issue.
Mm-hmm. Because philosophy is just bullshit.
See, to me, philosophy is the only thing that matters.
But it's just talking and words. It doesn't do anything. It's not a physical thing. It's not real. What does it matter?
See, I stay up at night wondering about the mysteries of the universe.
Yeah, and didn't Big O just tell you not to?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I really like Big O, because, well, it didn't say not to. It said to not worry, but to still seek the truth. Of course, it got complicated because, what's his name?
Well, didn't you notice that anyone who was seeking out memories got fucked?
Yeah, well,
so
not
it's
everyone.
Actually telling you not to seek out the truth.
But Angel found the full truth, and she was fine with it, because she realized what it was, and it didn't destroy her. What's his name? What was that guy's name? The guy in the bandages?
Schwarzwald.
Schwarzwald found the truth and couldn't handle it and died.
Yeah.
Rosewater found the truth and freaked out, and that was the end of him.
Mm-hmm.
Angel found the truth and almost freaked out, but then dealt with it.
Well, didn't Gordon Rosewater make the truth and made himself forget or something?
See, there's a super spoilers from this point on. Like, if you haven't seen the show, just stop listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. But Rosewater, I get the feeling that one of the points they made is that, at least in this show, because at the end of Big O, like all of you saw it, it pans back and you discover that the whole world was just a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, stage lights in the sky and machinery outside manning the stage. And it seems to hint at the idea that an omniscient being like God couldn't exist because there's nothing to live for being omnipotent, and he would create a world in which people could exist and then deny himself memory of doing so, thus allowing people to exist with free will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at least one way to interpret it. And it seems to me that Rosewater is a God who's forgotten that he's God, willingly, and that his son was just dumb. I don't know what I can say about
it. Yeah, I don't know
him.
What was up with that. Like, he started out in Big O 1 as, like, the mysterious big evil guy. And then towards the end of Big O 1, you actually saw him a couple times, and he talked, and he was there. And it was just like, hey, how you doing? It wasn't like, whoa, you're the big bad guy. It was like, hey, what's up? And then in Big O 2, he was just dumb as a brick, and out there doing all kinds of crazy stuff,
yep.
Unbefitting of a big evil character like the Emperor or someone.
But I realized I like how they did that, in the sense that in Big O 1, you don't see a lot of Gordon Rosewater.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see him, or Alex
Rosewater.
Yeah, Gordon's the father. But when he's there, you see him for a second, and he says something, and he seems very intelligent superficially. And even in Big O 2, superficially, he's very intelligent and very wise. Like, he sits there eating fine meals with that pretentious music playing in the background, constantly telling himself that he's doing the right thing, constantly just spouting philosophy that he doesn't seem to understand himself. And Big O 2, as you get to know this character more and more, you realize that he's full of shit, and he doesn't know anything. And he's just an idiot who happens to be in a place of power. And
mm-hmm.
I kind of like how they did that. How there was no villain, There was just one idiot, one senile god, and then a bunch of people trying to figure out what was going on.
Well, no, what's his name was the villain?
Alan Gabriel.
Alan Gabriel was a villain. He was a bad guy.
See, I think the reason he was a villain, because I know, Alan, you made a good point. I didn't think of that. Alan Gabriel is really the only villain in all of Big O.
Yeah.
No one else is a villain. They may do bad things, but they
Well, Beck started out as a villain, but he unvillained.
But he wasn't, I don't consider him a villain. He was just an antagonist.
No, I think he was actually a villain in the first, like, episode or two when he first did bad. And then when he broke out of jail on his own in that other episode, he was still a villain. But then after that second time he appeared and he was done for, then he unvillained.
See, now here's where I disagree with you. Because to me, Beck wasn't a villain. He was just playing his role, just like Roger Smith was playing his role. Because notice that while Beck tried to do horrible things, he always had this sense of style and this sense of morals, and he never stepped over the line. And Alan Gabriel is the only character in the show that has no morals whatsoever. He has absolutely no compunction against doing anything, and he forces Beck to step over the line, and Beck can't deal with that. And even in the beginning, when Beck does his evil, he's not a villain. He's not the villain of the show. He's just an antagonist and a plot point.
No, if you've never, when I first saw the show ever, in like the first two episodes, I was like, all right, Beck that bastard, go get him. You know, he was a bad guy.
Oh yeah, definitely Beck that bastard, go get him, but I wouldn't use the word villain.
Oh, I would. At least if you only watch the first two episodes of the Big O 1.
Well, if you watch Big O 1, and that, yeah, but if you watch all of Big O 1, you'd think Alex is the villain.
Yeah, if I watched 1 and 2 again, he wouldn't be viewed as a villain because I've already seen the whole thing, but when I remember that when I watched it fresh, he seemed like a villain right away. So
I guess to me, because having seen the whole show, the only character I can justify calling a villain is Alan Gabriel. Because everyone does what they do for a reason. And everyone who do whatever they do, they believe that they're in the right. Or at least they know they're in the wrong and they've dealt with that. Alan Gabriel doesn't care right or wrong anything. He has absolutely no direction. He's just doing whatever the hell he wants for fun. And whatever the hell he wants tends to involve hurting people.
Yeah.
He's not even after the truth. He's not after anything.
I don't know. You know, it's just you never know what he's thinking is the thing. He might be thinking that, you know, he might have some crazy whack job plan where if he does this and this and this, then he'll somehow get something. But he doesn't ever get anything. So either his whack job plan isn't working, or at some point he like his whack job plan fails and he gives up on it and goes crazy. But you don't realize it because you didn't know his whack job plan to begin with. You know, but I don't know.
Because Roger Smith was kind of obsessed with memory, and that's what was keeping him down and preventing him from realizing what he was. Mm-hmm. And once he realized what he was, he didn't, like, get rid of the idea of memory. He still cherishes the memories he has. He cherishes the past, looks forward to the future, but he lives in the present, as opposed to living in the past. Alan Gabriel lives in the present, but he ignores the past completely.
Mm-hmm.
One moment is completely separate from any other moment in his life.
But notice how as Roger gets better and better and understands what's going on more and more, it's like when he stops trying to worry about memories, he gets more memories of how to do awesome things with the robot.
Yes, the robot is definitely a metaphorical device throughout
See, that's the good kind of thing, is where you have, you know, the completely mundane action, but you also have the meaning, and it's together in the same thing.
Because at first, they did that perfectly. Remember when Angel discovered the studio where she'd grown up?
Yeah.
That was very much the metaphor and mundane plot going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they'd had more episodes and more money, they could have constructed an ending for the whole show that was similar.
You know what it is? It's like,
they took the easy way out.
Yeah. You know what it's like? It's like, you know when you read a book and you read in between the lines. It's not, you know, they don't actually write down what their meaning is. You're just reading a perfectly normal story, but there's a meaning there, and you have to extract it by thinking about what you just read. But it seems that a lot of these animes that try to, or, you know, especially animes, but also TV shows and movies that try to be meaningful, what they do is they might make you read between the lines the whole way, but then at the end, they just take what is written in between the lines and put it in bold text at the end. And that's what I kind of don't like. I wish I could just read between the lines the whole time and that stupid people would, you know, maintain the thing where they didn't see anything between the lines. You know?
Well, look at the end of Trigun. All right, I'm going to spoil the end of Trigun. So if anyone who is afraid of spoilers but is still listening, I'm spoiling Trigun now too. But I think that did it very well. Because the moral, you know, no killing, whatever, because he doesn't kill Knives at the end, is there. And if you read these lines, you can see all the conflict and the fact that he's going to kill Knives throughout the entire final fight. And it's not until the very end when he decides not to. But then he doesn't. And they don't do a crazy metaphor, whatever. They just show him carrying Knives back to town, and that's the end.
Yep, that's a
and
a
if
very
you
good
if you watch the fight, and you watch the expressions on his face, I mean, if you don't notice any of that, you just see an awesome fight, and then the show ends. And if you watch his face and you pay attention to what's going on, you get all that other meaning as well. Mm-hmm. But the show isn't ruined for the people who don't get the metaphor, nor is it ruined for the people who don't care about the action.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone on really long about that, so I think that's a good stopping point.
All right, sure.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcast, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.